Chapter 60. Hopeless fervor which had no time to surprise Dr. Monaghan. Before, reverting to their previous conversation, he continued in a sinister tone, "Sigh, senior doctor. As you were saying, it is my own affair. A very desperate affair. There are no two men in this part of the world that could have saved themselves by swimming as you have done," the doctor said, admiringly. And again there was silence between those two men. They were both reflecting, and the diversity of their natures made their thoughts born from their meeting swing afar from each other. The doctor, impelled to risky action by his loyalty to the Goulds, wondered with thankfulness at the chain of accident which had brought that man back, where he would be of the greatest use in the work of saving the Santome mine. The doctor was loyal to the mine. It presented itself to his 50 years old eyes in the shape of a little woman in a soft dress with a long train, with a head attractively overweighted by a great mass of fair hair, and the delicate preciousness of her inner worth, partaking of a gem and a flower, revealed in every attitude of her person. As the dangers thickened round the Santome mine, this illusion acquired force, permanency, and authority. It claimed him at last. This claim, exalted by a spiritual detachment from the usual sanctions of hope and reward, made Dr. Monaghan's thinking, acting, individuality extremely dangerous to himself and to others, all his scruples vanishing in the proud feeling that his devotion was the only thing that stood between an admirable woman and a frightful disaster. It was a sort of intoxication which made him utterly indifferent to Deckett's fate, but left his wits perfectly clear for the appreciation of Deckett's political idea. It was a good idea, and Berrios was the only instrument of its realization. The doctor's soul, withered and shrunk by the shame of a moral disgrace, became implacable in the expansion of its tenderness. Nostromo's return was providential. He did not think of him humanely, as of a fellow creature just escaped from the jaws of death. The capitalist for him was the only possible messenger to Cata. The very man. The doctor's misanthropic mistrust of mankind the bitterer, because based on personal failure, did not lift him sufficiently above common weaknesses. He was under the spell of an established reputation. Trumpeted by Captain Mitchell, grown in repetition, and fixed in general assent, Nostromo's faithfulness had never been questioned by Dr. Monaghan as a fact. It was not likely to be questioned now he stood in desperate need of it himself. Dr. Monaghan was human. He accepted the popular conception of the Capitas's incorruptibility simply because no word or fact had ever contradicted a mere affirmation. It seemed to be a part of the man, like his whiskers or his teeth. It was impossible to conceive him otherwise. The question was whether he would consent to go on such a dangerous and desperate errand. The doctor was observant enough to have become aware from the first of something peculiar in the man's temper. He was no doubt sore about the loss of the silver. "It will be necessary to take him into my fullest confidence," he said to himself, with a certain acuteness of insight into the nature he had to deal with. On Nostromo's side, the silence had been full of black irresolution, anger, and mistrust. He was the first to break it, however. "The swimming was no great matter," he said. "It is what went before, and what comes after," that he did not quite finish what he meant to say, breaking off short, as though his thought had butted against a solid obstacle. The doctor's mind pursued its own schemes with Machiavellian subtlety. He said as sympathetically as he was able, "It is unfortunate, Capitas. But no one would think of blaming you. Very unfortunate. To begin with, the treasure ought never to have left the mountain. But it was Deckett who, however, he is dead. There is no need to talk of him." "No," assented Nostromo, as the doctor paused, "there is no need to talk of dead men. But I am not dead yet. You are all right. Only a man of your intrepidity could have saved himself." And this Dr. Monaghan was sincere. He esteemed highly the intrepidity of that man, whom he valued but little, being disillusioned as to mankind in general, because of the particular instance in which his own manhood had failed. Having had to encounter single-handed during his period of eclipse many physical dangers, he was well aware of the most dangerous element common to them all, of the crushing, paralyzing sense of human littleness, which is what really defeats a man struggling with natural forces, alone, far from the eyes of his fellows. He was eminently fit to appreciate the mental image he made for himself of the Capitas, after hours of tension and anxiety, precipitated suddenly into an abyss of waters and darkness, without earth or sky, and confronting it, not only with an undismayed mind, but with sensible success. Of course, the man was an incomparable swimmer, that was known, but the doctor judged that this instance testified to a still greater intrepidity of spirit. It was pleasing to him. He augured well from it for the success of the arduous mission with which he meant to entrust the Capitas so marvelously restored to usefulness. And in a tone vaguely gratified, he observed, "It must have been terribly dark." "It was the worst darkness of the Golfo," the Capitas assented, briefly. He was mollified by what seemed a sign of some faint interest in such things as had befallen him, and dropped a few descriptive phrases with an affected and curt nonchalance. At that moment he felt communicative. He expected the continuance of that interest which, whether accepted or rejected, would have restored to him his personality, the only thing lost in that desperate affair. But the doctor, engrossed by a desperate adventure of his own, was terrible in the pursuit of his idea. He let an exclamation of regret escape him. "I could almost wish you had shouted, and shown a light." This unexpected utterance astounded the Capitas by its character of cold-blooded atrocity. It was as much as to say, "I wish you had shown yourself a coward. I wish you had your throat cut for your pains." Naturally he referred it to himself, whereas it related only to the silver, being uttered simply, and with many mental reservations. Surprise and rage rendered him speechless, and the doctor pursued, practically unheard by Nostromo, whose stirred blood was beating violently in his ears. "For I am convinced Satillo, in possession of the silver, would have turned short round and made for some small port abroad. Economically it would have been wasteful, but still less wasteful than having it sunk. It was the next best thing to having it at hand in some safe place, and using part of it to buy up Satillo. But I doubt whether Don Carlos would have ever made up his mind to it. He is not fit for Costaguana, and that is a fact, Capitas." The Capitas had mastered the fury that was like a tempest in his ears in time to hear the name of Don Carlos. He seemed to have come out of it a changed man, a man who spoke thoughtfully in a soft and even voice. "And would Don Carlos have been content if I had surrendered this treasure? I should not wonder if they were all of that way of thinking now," the doctor said, grimly. I was never consulted. Deckard had it his own way. Their eyes are open by this time, I should think. I for one know that, if that silver turned up this moment miraculously ashore, I would give it to Satillo. And, as things stand, I would be approved." "Turned up miraculously," repeated the Capitas very low, then raised his voice. "See that, senor, would be a greater miracle than any saint could perform." "I believe you, Capitas," said the doctor, dryly. He went on to develop his view of Satillo's dangerous influence upon the situation. And the Capitas, listening as if in a dream, felt himself of as little account as the indistinct, motionless shape of the dead man whom he saw upright under the beam, with his air of listening also, disregarded, forgotten, like a terrible example of neglect. "Was it for an unconsidered and foolish whim that they came to me then?" he interrupted suddenly. "Had I not done enough for them to be of some account, poor Dios? Is it that the hombres finos, the gentlemen, need not think, as long as there is a man of the people ready to risk his body and soul? Or, perhaps, we have no souls like dogs?" There was Deckard too, with his plan, the doctor reminded him again. Sigh. and the rich man in San Francisco who had something to do with that treasure. To what do I know? No. I have heard too many things. It seems to me that everything is permitted to the rich. I understand, Capitus, the doctor began. What Capitus? Broke in Nostromo, in a forcible but even voice. The Capitus is undone, destroyed. There is no Capitus. Oh, no. You will find the Capitus no more. Come, this is childish, remonstrated the doctor, and the other calmed down suddenly. I have been indeed like a little child, he muttered. And as his eyes met again the shape of the murdered man suspended in his awful immobility, which seemed the uncomplaining immobility of attention, he asked, wondering gently, why did Satillo give the estrapade to this pitiful wretch? Do you know? No torture could have been worse than his fear. Killing I can understand. His anguish was intolerable to behold. But why should he torment him like this? He could tell no more. No, he could tell nothing more. Any sane man would have seen that. He had told him everything. But I tell you what it is, Capitus. Satillo would not believe what he was told. Not everything. What is it he would not believe? I cannot understand. I can, because I have seen the man. He refuses to believe that the treasure is lost. What, the Capitus cried out in a discomposed tone. That startles you, eh? Am I to understand, Senor, Nostromo went on in a deliberate and, as it were, watchful tone, that Satillo thinks the treasure has been saved by some means? No, no, that would be impossible, said the doctor, with conviction, and Nostromo emitted a grunt in the dark. That would be impossible. He thinks that the silver was no longer in the lighter when she was sunk. He has convinced himself that the whole show of getting it away to sea is a mere sham got up to deceive Camacho and his nationals, Pedrito Montero, Senor Fuentes, our new chief politico, and himself too. Only, he says, he is no such fool. But he is devoid of sense. He is the greatest imbecile that ever called himself a colonel in this country of evil, growled Nostromo. He is no more unreasonable than many sensible men, said the doctor. He has convinced himself that the treasure can be found because he desires passionately to possess himself of it. And he is also afraid of his officers turning upon him and going over to Pedrito, whom he has not the courage either to fight or trust. Do you see that, Capitus? He need fear no desertion, as long as some hope remains of that enormous plunder turning up. I have made it my business to keep this very hope up. You have? The Capitus de Cargadores repeated cautiously. Well, that is wonderful. And how long do you think you are going to keep it up? As long as I can. What does that mean? I can tell you exactly. As long as I live, the doctor retorted in a stubborn voice. Then, in a few words, he described the story of his arrest and the circumstances of his release. I was going back to that silly scoundrel when we met, he concluded. Nostromo had listened with profound attention. You have made up your mind, then, to a speedy death, he muttered through his clenched teeth. Perhaps, my illustrious Capitus, the doctor said, testily. Why, you are not the only one here who can look an ugly death in the face. No doubt, mumbled Nostromo, loud enough to be overheard. There may be even more than two fools in this place. Who knows? And that is my affair, said the doctor, curtly. As taking out the accursed silver to sea was my affair, retorted Nostromo. I see. Bueno. Each of us has his reasons. But you were the last man I conversed with before I started, and you talked to me as if I were a fool. Nostromo had a great distaste for the doctor's sardonic treatment of his great reputation. Decade's faintly ironic recognition used to make him uneasy, but the familiarity of a man like Don Martin was flattering, whereas the doctor was a nobody. He could remember him a penniless outcast, slinking about the streets of Sulaco, without a single friend or acquaintance, till Don Carlos Gould took him into the service of the mine. You may be very wise, he went on, thoughtfully, staring into the obscurity of the room, pervaded by the gruesome enigma of the tortured and murdered Hirsch. But I am not such a fool as when I started. I have learned one thing since, and that is that you are a dangerous man. Dr. Monaghan was too startled to do more than exclaim, "What is it you say?" If he could speak, he would say the same thing, pursued Nostromo, with a nod of his shadowy head silhouetted against the starlit window. I do not understand you, said Dr. Monaghan, faintly. No? Perhaps, if you had not confirmed Satillo in his madness, he would have been in no haste to give the estrapade to that miserable Hirsch. The doctor started at the suggestion. But his devotion, absorbing all his sensibilities, had left his heart steeled against remorse. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.